and welcome to another episode of GT Radio Conversations with Tino. That is Juan. And tonight I have a great friend on the show. We were already cracking up before we even got on the line here. Welcome, Michael, again on the show. How you doing, buddy?
I must have done something right that I got a call back for a second show.
You did, man. You were good. Hey, so before the show, you and I had a couple of conversations, but before the show, we talked a little bit, and I know that you have taken up hiking again, because 3 years ago you came to G2E and you went to Red Rock, and you can tell us a little story. But the reason why I want to ask you that is because I know it's a way for you to disconnect, right? So tell us a little bit about how you got back into it. Tell us a little bit about how it helps you disconnect, and tell us some crazy stories if you had any bear encounters or something out there,
Well, the most dangerous animal you'll ever see when you're in the outdoors is another human being. That's the first thing. I used to teach scuba, and I used to tell my students, don't worry about sharks and barracudas. The most dangerous creature is your dive buddy. He's the one that's going to get you the most trouble. But I was into, I'm from New York, Long Island area, and some beautiful parks in this area, the Adirondacks, of course, and the Catskills, Harriman State Park, and in my 20s and early 30s, also doing in Pennsylvania, the Delaware Water Gap. But I did a lot, I put my hiking gear away and I got into diving scuba for the next 20 years. But then going to G2E a few years ago was my first trip out to Vegas ever. And the first day I was there, I went to the Grand Canyon. I remember just driving through Arizona. I felt like I was in one of those movies. You just saw an unbelievable scenery the whole way. And it was in the zone. I forgot that I was really out there, coming that Monday for work. But then someone told me, go to Red Rock Canyon. And I ended up spending like 5-6 hours there. In fact, I wandered off the trail and I ended up having to bushwhack back through again. And my legs looked like I just gone through a dartboard. But it was just gorgeous. And, everybody who's been out there, knows Red Rock. And subsequent trips out there, did Yosemite and Death Valley and the Mojave Desert, Valley of Fire, Zion. I mean, that's just a really, really gorgeous part of the country. It doesn't have the ocean, which we have here, but it's great. And I tell you, when we work in casinos and has to be one of the more populous hustle and bustle type of venues, and being here in New York City, certainly we have our share of people. We all need to figure out a way to kind of find our hiding place. And for me, going in the outdoors, I just came back from a week in South Dakota, the Badlands and Black Hills. I did spend a couple of days in Deadwood and made some contributions on the gaming floor there. But it's just great to get out. And when you see other parts of the country, you just realize what a gorgeous piece of real estate this country is of ours.
Oh, absolutely. What is it about getting out there and getting disconnected? What is it? What does it do for your head? And how do you feel once you get into it, and how do you feel when you come back?
Yeah, I've got this philosophy that you don't go on vacation to get away. Oh, I got to get away, people say. Get away from what? Because whatever you're getting away from, it's waiting for you when you come back. You get off that plane, you pick up your luggage, guess what's there, what you were getting. So my philosophy has always been go someplace you want to go. Go do something you want to do. Go see something you want to see. So when I was out in South Dakota, I got a chance to see Wild Bill Hickok's grave. I got to see the famous Sheriff Seth Bullock's grave. I got to see Mount Rushmore. For me, the earth, whether it's the oceans, the mountains, the trails, it's spiritual. I find an inner peace. And, with the pace that most of us put in, I was here today before 9. I'm still in the office now. I do 3 hours in the car every day. We need to recharge because we've got to come in every single day and fire on all cylinders. And for me, when I'm walking around with my compass and my map and, my basic supplies on my back, to me, it's like, I don't know what heaven is, but, man, I'm really close right now.
Yeah. Well said. Yeah, it's a good feeling, right?
Oh, it really is. And you know, you meet some people sometimes along the trail, and other times you meet nobody for hours. I was over in the Black Hills, and, you know, I went up a fairly low mountain, maybe about 3,000, went up a game trail, about 3,000 feet up. As I was coming back down, there was a small herd of bison. And, you know, I had to make this very circuitous route to get back. It was unbelievable. And one of the bison was about as big as the Jeep that I rented. And I'm just looking at this thing. I'm like, holy smoke. You know, these are creatures I've only seen on TV. And then all of a sudden, I'm almost face to face with them. And it humbles you. I mean, it really humbles you. When you see one of nature's creatures, and you're like, wow, I'm right. It's not on Discovery Channel. It's not on National Geographic. It's right in front of me. I think too often, a lot of people spend too much time trying to capture the moment and not enough time living the moment. You know, everybody's got to take out their cell phones at concerts. Does anybody ever listen to the music anymore? You know?
Yeah.
You know, put the phone away, shake your hips, nod your head, and just enjoy the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I got to get you out there sometime.
As you were talking, I was just thinking we should plan a trip, you know, for at least for a couple of days. It'd be great to do that. We should organize that.
Yeah, I'll get some trail mix and some red wine, and we'll be good, you and I.
Oh, absolutely. That's all we need. We'll find the other animals out there. So your career path into the casino business has been a little different than most people's, you know, whereas most people have years and years of casino experience. Your experience was your market. Tell us a little bit about how you gained that experience, and then tell us, when you came into the casino business, what you had to learn and how your expertise developed.
Yeah, sure. I just turned 7 years old in the casino industry last month.
Congratulations.
Here at Resorts World. Thank you. Resorts World Casino NYC. I've been working in communications, whether it be journalism, PR, or marketing in New York. Basically, since I got out of college, went to University of Dayton, Ohio. I was working for a daily newspaper, came back home, and I've been working since the 80s, you know, in New York, and working for, you know, colleges and environmental groups, aquariums, science centers, art museums. One of my clients ended up becoming the PR director here, Michelle Stoddard. The advertising manager here quit. I was running a small ad firm. I was really kind of tired of worrying about bottom lines every single day and paying people and such, and I was losing the excitement of doing marketing and advertising and PR. So I came here knowing – and I said to her, Michelle, I don't know anything about casinos. She goes, it's the advertising in Queens, Brooklyn, New York. You know, all that stuff I know. You know, so I showed up, and they hired me within a day. And I didn't have a clue, Tino, when I came here. You know, you and I talked about this off the air. My first meeting I was in, somebody brought up the term ADT. And for me, ADT was the alarm company that I have at home. You know. So, you know,
like,
I wrote a little post-it.
About security?
Yeah, exactly. I wrote a little post-it, gave it to my boss, Missy Lawrence, at the time. She was the senior VP of marketing. Now she's the president of our Bimini Bahamas property. He was also a Bimini. And I wrote down, what's ADT? And she just nodded and goes, I'll tell you later. And that was really the starting point for, okay, so you know how to write, you know how to edit, you know how to buy media, you know how to do research surveys, you know how to manage, you know. But I don't have a clue what the gaming industry is about. I wasn't even much of a gambler. I mean, since I've started here, I've gotten a little bit of a taste. I do like video poker. I would enjoy blackjack, but I'm really lousy at it, so I'm better off getting away from the tables. But I had to learn everything, you know. But a lot of what I did and have been doing here parallels the museum marketing, because the museums have members, and those members carry cards, and those cards give you benefits, and we want those people to keep coming back, so we communicate them in all various channels. Plus, we're reaching out to the general public to try to get more people to come in. So all of a sudden, once I started getting a little comfortable with the gaming floor, all of a sudden it clicked in. This is the same stuff I've been doing for the last 25 years. It's just a different product. Instead of selling a science experience or selling a botanic experience to a family of four, I'm selling a different type of entertainment experience to a different type of customer. But it's all about experience, and everyone listening in knows that. None of us would have our jobs if it wasn't for this magical concept called customers. And so everything we do has to be customer-focused, how we take care of them, how we communicate with them, how we reward them. So a lot of this stuff did line up. But I will tell you, a lot of my nonprofit brethren, when I told them what I was doing, you know, you would have thought that I was selling my soul to the devil, because they were like, I used to always say that because I worked for nonprofits doesn't mean I thought that we were no profit. We weren't allowed to give out dividends at the end of the year, you know, and our budgets had to match our revenues. And if there was luckily an additional, you know, revenues that beat expenses, that just went back basically into usually some type of a foundational account or someplace where we can tuck the money and then use it again next year. But I always had that drive to make money. I used to tell one of my clients, stop giving free admission. Free admission is putting a value on your product, which is zero. Put something out there, even if it's $5 or, you know, whatever. But you have to put a price on the value, because there's an experience to that. So right now, I have to say, I feel very comfortable in the casino world. I don't know nearly as much as a lot of people I've met. But combined with my knowledge of the market, I feel very comfortable every day coming to work.
What was the hardest thing for you to grasp in the casino business?
Not having a real genuine love or just a bug for gaming. You know, that was hard. When I went to work for the New York Aquarium, when I was in high school, I either wanted to be a journalist or marine biologist. So I've had that love of marine sciences, and so very comfortable there. I was out of my element. You know, it was hard for me at first to try to figure out why customers would come here solely to gamble, knowing that the odds are so heavily against them. You know, but after a while, I realized what they were doing was no different than when I was buying season tickets to the Rangers. I was dropping $5,000 plus a year, plus the expense of the commuting into there, whether it be the train, Long Island Railroad, or parking in the city, which is New York City, is a fortune. I mean, it's basically $40 to $50 to park for a venue. And, of course, the $12, $15 beer and the $16 hot dog. I was probably dropping, in the course of a year, probably close to maybe $10,000 to be entertained. And then once I connected what I was doing with what the gamer was doing, I said, you know what? Now I get it. Because it really, and then I started playing, so I can go to anybody's casino right now and sit down with $200-$300 and play video poker, knowing I'm probably going to lose it all, but I don't care, because I enjoy seeing if I can get, you know, three of a kind, or, you know, or a straight flush or whatever. And then I have myself a bourbon and I just zone out. The way I would zone out climbing a mountain, or the way I would zone out, you know, in a shipwreck, I could zone out on a video poker machine for 2-3 hours in my little world and just enjoy myself. So for me, the hardest part really was just getting to understand, getting inside the customer's head. Why are you coming here every week and dropping whatever you're dropping, 100, 200, whatever your, you know, ADT level is? Why are you doing that? And then I realized it's all about the experience. It's all about, I want to go somewhere and maybe drop $100 and have a good time. And boy, when that clicked in, it was like, you know, the ah moment. That was the ah. Yeah, that's what it's about.
Interesting. Yeah, very, very interesting. Now, Resorts World is a unique property in terms of retention. What makes it different, and how do you deal with it?
Well, we are really hyper-local. Our market is basically within 35, 40 miles max. You know, we're primarily, you know, we're Queens, Brooklyn, Manhattan, and Long Island. We're not trying You know, my boss, Brad Egner, Senior VP of Marketing, we're not trying to pull the Jersey customer in. We're not trying to pull the Connecticut customer in. We're not trying to pull the upstate customer in. We're filling the funnel, and we're hammering the message every day, local, 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 local. And that's who we get. You know, we are building a hotel, and since we're right across the street, literally from JFK Airport, we do feel that next summer, you know, we will see a new audience, a new customer coming in, you know, the overnight customer, which we don't have. So for us, it is about that retention. It is about, you know, getting the people that we have as members to incentivize them enough to come often. And you know, we see some of the same people every day, and we see a lot of the people every week. And so for us, we don't have perhaps the same critical time period that other, you know, regional or national properties do, where they're trying to get as much as they can from 2-3 days, because our guys live around the corner. You know, our guys live 10 minutes away. They're taking the A train right to our front door. They're hopping on one of our shuttle buses and coming in. They're taking the Long Island Railroad to Jamaica, and then we're picking not Jamaica the islands, but Jamaica and Queens, and they're taking one of our shuttles in and getting free play for their troubles. You know, so for us, it's a little different. It's very different dynamic than, you know, some of the colleagues that I've talked to who have spoken about, you know, the need to attract the person to travel in. We don't have travel in. We have come on over.
Right. Drop in. We're right here. Yeah.
Drop in. Yeah. Yeah, we're like the neighborhood park. You come anytime you want.
What? Who are your competitors?
We do have, I would say, regional marketplace compared. We're the only casino in New York City. And we get between 15 and 20,000 people a day, and those numbers go up on Friday night and Saturday and Sunday. You know, there are properties within, 30, 40 miles of us. But really, going back to what I said, you know, a lot of the customers coming in, they come in for the entertainment value. I think our biggest competitors, to a large extent, New York City has so much media noise to it. So we compete from a message standpoint, you know, share a voice, as they say. We should just call it top of mind before the acronym marketing police got a hold and ruined everything. But the top of mind awareness that you can come here, you know, we fight that battle with every entertainment venue, you know, in New York City. So,
yeah, and there's a lot
you
of
know,
them.
Yeah. So, you know, so if our 50-year-old female slot player who loves coming and playing Wheel of Fortune or Quick Hits or Green Machine, you know, let's say she has a couple hundred bucks she wants to spend on a Saturday. Well, you know, she can come to us. You've got right now, you've got two professional baseball teams within a half an hour of us. There is this place called Broadway. There's a million different museums. I mean, we can go on and on and on. One of the reasons why New York City has 55 million tourists every year is we have a heck of a lot of stuff going on here. So if somebody wants to do a night out, there's your competition.
Yeah, it's all there, and there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. Now, so how do you deal with that from a marketing standpoint? Because that's not, the frequency is really high. It's not really a traditional model, right? So how do you deal with that marketing-wise?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we do have to do, because there's so much going on in this city, we have to, I think, probably maybe even slightly overinvest in our media buy more than we probably would like to. Because if we want to be on TV or we want to be on radio, man, there's a lot of people, there's only so much inventory. And when there's limited inventory and there's a lot of demand, it's like any other product and service. You know, supply and demand, those spots are going up. So, we're spending more on media buy than probably a lot of other places are. The other thing that we do try to do is we try to be very consistent about who our audience, who our targets are, and we streamline everything that we do to really line up with those folks. We want to, as much as possible, greatly reduce or eliminate waste. You know, there's no sense in me, you know, marketing up, let's say, in the Bronx, because they're much closer to another casino, and they're not going to come to us in large mass to make it worth me spending money there. It's not worth me putting money in New Jersey because of Atlantic City. So I avoid it, even though I have media folks pitching me all the time. I think one of the problems with a lot of these agencies is they're not paying attention. They're just sending the same people the same sales pitch. You know, they're just casting upon the water and hope that something bites. So, you know, we're out there aggressively in the community. Our player development departments, our network as much as we can. We have partnerships with large venues like Madison Square Garden and the Barclays Center and the Nassau Coliseum. We just signed a deal with this really nice large amphitheater out on the eastern part of Long Island to help, you know, anchor that marketplace for us. And this is all trying to attract the new player to come in. You know, we're doing about, you know, we're doing 1,000-plus members every week, new members. We need to keep that number up. You know, the volume has to always be up for us. And with our own players, we have to do what everybody else is doing. We have to make sure that they feel like they're the most important customer when they come in here. You know, we want to give them great visitor experience. We want to make sure that their gaming experience meets and exceeds their expectations. We want to be friendly. We want them to come back. We want them to say, I really enjoyed my time at Resorts World. I got to come back next week again. And then we hammer the heck out of them with our direct mail and now more than ever our email programs. You know, we want to make sure that they don't forget about us.
Yeah, you always have to be top of mind, right?
Always. The minute when someone says, what should we do this weekend? If you're an attraction and your name doesn't come up in that short list, you're screwed. Because if it doesn't come up this week, they're going somewhere else. And if they have a great time at that other place, that's going to come up next week when they say, what are we going to do this weekend? And eventually they forget
right.
about you. And then that's death when they forget about you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You mentioned something about a hotel when we talked last. What's going on? You guys are doing some stuff, right?
Yeah, we're in the middle of a very large addition. The centerpiece to that will be our 408-room hotel. Depending upon who you talk to on our project management and construction side, it's somewhere between 12 and 14 months away. I am not at liberty right now to speak of what the flag is, but when we do announce it, it'll be a perfect brand match to who we are. So it'll be a 4-star, and we'll have some suites in there, which will be really nice. So we're excited about that. You know, then we also have additional gaming space. I mean, right now we have a little over 6,000 total games, 4,500 VLTs, and 1,500 ETGs. So we'll have more gaming floor to accommodate that, more restaurants, more bars, retail, spas. So it really takes the Resorts World brand, which is extremely strong in Asia. They recently opened Resorts World Birmingham in London. Of course, I've mentioned Resorts World Bimini in the Bahamas, and you know, out in Las Vegas, we're building, you know, Resorts World Las Vegas on the northern point of the Strip. But it positions us more as a resort than just strictly a casino. So, you know, we'll have that. And again, since we're literally right across the street from JFK Airport, we will have the nicest hotel in the area. And we will be the only hotel in the area that actually gives the folks who book something to do at night. So for us, it's, you know, it's a bit of a cliche to use the term, but I'm going to use it anyway. It's a game changer. The way sports betting has been such a game changer for a lot of states, adding this 400-plus room hotel will be a game changer for us for many ways. The travel industry needing a place to stay, the national and really the international traveling tourists coming in needing a place to stay, the ability for us to reward our players, the ability for us to comp our best players, the ability for us to extend the Friday and Saturday night play of our players totally changes our game. And it's really exciting because there's nothing better than to start planning. And I have a draft of it done now, you know, planning a rollout that's going to culminate in what we think is going to be a very, very successful next phase for us. So yeah, it's really something.
That's fantastic. Congratulations. Sounds good.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think the future of marketing is, given all of the competition that's coming in?
I'm sorry, what about me again?
What do you think the future of marketing is when you look at all the competition coming in to these markets?
Yeah, well, you know, you can't pick up a gaming news or an email, you know, without seeing the word, you know, saturation or oversaturation of market, and in a lot of areas that's true. In the Northeast, you know, that's certainly true. Four fully licensed casinos opened up upstate New York, in addition to the Seneca casinos, in addition to the racinos, folks like us who have not been yet given full table game license, and of course you have established casinos in Connecticut and in Massachusetts. You know, recently there was a property opening up there, and of course just south of us in Atlantic City. So this corridor has gotten pretty busy as well. Time will tell if the marketplace can support the number of properties that there are competing for the same, you know, same gaming and entertainment dollar. You know, for us, our model, we rely very heavy on gaming revenue. You know, we don't have the entertainment venue that most other properties have. So that's both a good thing and a bad thing. You know, we have to attract customers who want a game. The upside of that is that because of the population that we're in, we're positioned well to be able to do that. Marketing is going to have to adjust the way every other industry is going to have to address the competition. And again, this goes back to our early conversation. Whether you're marketing a casino or you're marketing a botanic garden or you're marketing a retail store, when you're positioned at the top, it's pretty easy. But then when other forces start coming in and they take some square footage up, you have to position yourself that we're the place you need to check out first. You know, come to us first. And, oh, by the way, if you're not happy with where you last went, come check us out. So I do think there needs to be, you know, maybe a reshaping of how we look at each other as competition. We all work together cooperatively when there are, you know, gaming regulations or zoning issues or whatever you have it. But at the end of the day, you'd be hard-pressed to find you know, many marketing people who would be upset if their prime competition, you know, started falling by the wayside. I don't root for anybody's failure, and never have. I always felt that, you know, we're going to do as best we can for our customers, and we're going to do the best job marketing that we can, and let's see what happens. But it's a lot easier when there's less competition around, that's for sure.
Since you started in the gaming business, and you came from the outside, and you've just learned all these things in the last 7 years. What advice can you give people like you who have started in another industry and are looking to come into the casino business?
Well, I think a lot of skills are applicable. And I've talked to some of my casino marketing colleagues who have, you know, as many years experience as I have, but almost all of theirs has been in, you know, in the casino space. And I always say to them, hey, one day you ought to try working for a museum. And they look at me like, I go, I go, what you do, you can do there. You can do the same thing. Skills are skills. And if you've got good customer service skills, you can be successful at Macy's. You can be successful on the gaming floor. It's no different. Obviously, F&B and hospitality, that is a very easy switch. But, you know, in the world that you and I, you know, play in, it's a lot of marketing people. You know, the skills really are very – once you understand how the business operates and what the goals are – you know, I was reading an article recently, and they said the biggest complaint that people have of their bosses is a lack of communication. So – you know, you go to your boss and say, what's the goal? What's the target? What are we trying to do here? What is the one direction I'm supposed to be going in every single day? Well, once you get that figured out, then you just let your skills and your experiences kick in. It's not that big of a jump. You know, and I may be annoying people right now. There may be people with 20 years experience in marketing who say, who the hell is this guy who's worked for museums and he's telling me it's not that hard of a transition? Well, sorry, it's really not. It's all about, do you know what you're doing? I could buy media. I bought media in this town for a college. I bought it for a zoo. I bought it for a casino. There's some of the people I bought for with in 1993, I'm still buying media from. People really are super talented, and they sometimes pigeonhole themselves into one area. Oh, I can never go work over there. Why not? I have a colleague. She's very talented. We always talk about, like, where could you work besides a casino? And I said, with your skills and your work ethic, you can work anywhere. You can work absolutely anywhere. Yeah. I have a marketing analytics guy who's brilliant. He can go analyze the hell out of anything. Noah could give him, you know, tide and cloud charts, and within a couple of hours he can figure out what the weather's gonna be for the next month. I mean, you know, there are people that we all have working with us and under us or above us that can do the same thing. It's just a matter of, you know, where your interests lie. My interest didn't lie in the casinos, but right now I could not even imagine leaving and going somewhere else because it's
right.
It's fun.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the key thing. It's definitely fun. Our business is not a 9-to-5 business. It's not a normal hours, right? I mean, people that get into
this
business have to expect long hours because we're 24/7, 7 days a week.
Well, we're only 20 hours a day. They give us 4 hours off in the morning. We have to close at we close at 6 and we reopen at 10. So I guess we're living the life of luxury here compared to the rest of the casinos around the country. But no, it's not even close to 9-to-5. And you have to. And you have to understand that the expectations are. I have colleagues who work at sports arenas, and they know that when their team is playing at home, they're going to be at the game until the game ends, and that's 9:30, 10 o'clock, guaranteed. So, if you're working in a venue like Barclays Center, which has the Nets and the Islanders, or if you work at Madison Square Garden with the Knicks and the Rangers, it's 41 home. You're talking 82 games, so 82 nights a year automatically, you're going to be working. In addition to your regular schedule, so you've got 82 nights already on the books, plus
already,
all the concerts that go. Yeah, so I mean, so you really do have to enjoy it because, God, if you don't enjoy what you're doing and you're putting in, I'm putting in probably 10 plus a day easy, but if you don't enjoy what you're doing and you got it, then becomes a grind. And then if it starts to become a grind, then you become less innovative and you take less chances and you start really just bogging down, and then you become, less effective at what you're doing. And all of a sudden you've gone from being a really sharp professional to being somebody that, the folks upstairs are saying, this is like dead weight. So, on the other hand, one of the things that I did a lot early on, and I'll be doing this tomorrow, I'll come in tomorrow at around 10:30, 11, and I'll work till midnight. I like to see some of my departments in action at different time periods, whether it's the retail or whether it's the AV crew or our players club. You get to see how they interact with the customer at 9-10 o'clock at night as opposed to 10 a.m. It's a different experience at that time. We see the demographics of our audience change dramatically to 10 a.m., it's mostly retirees 60 plus. By 4 or 5 o'clock, we're starting to see people coming out of work coming in. By 8, 9 o'clock at night, we're starting to see that, you know, that 30-year-old coming in. And then we just see the overnighters. You know, sometimes I leave here at midnight, I'm driving through the parking lot, and I'm seeing people pouring in. And I'm looking, I'm like, yeah, this is New York City. People just got off work. You know, so
yeah,
you do. You know, it's not 9 to 5. I don't know anybody who works 9 to 5. Nobody who works for me works 9 to 5. But we all work hard and we're all good at what we do, and that, you know, that's what makes it all work.
Yeah. Should we take some calls?
If you have a call, I'll be happy to take a call.
We got a lot of them.
Oh, okay.
Hello, Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Michael?
Yeah, Michael, it's Tito. It's Rogelio. Or sorry, Tito. It's,
hey, Rogelio, how are you?
Sorry, Tito. It's Rogelio. Good, good, good. Just I'm still in the office as well. It's going to be a long one today.
Rogelio,
Michael,
the marketing director at Dakota Magic in Dakota. And
okay.
He's also been on the show 2 times.
Yep, yep. Hey, Michael, I was kind of curious. Were you hiking before you worked in the casino business, or was this something you picked up while you were working in the casino business?
I've been hiking, you know. I always liked the outdoors. I've been underwater since I'm like 15, 16, and then hiking became one of those things where in the fall and the winter, when I'm not in the water as much, I realized that no one's on the trails because it's cold. And so I said, hey, I could put my scuba gear away, and I go put on my hiking gear and go out into the woods. It was G2E that got me to discover a different part of the country, and I just love it out there. Oh my gosh. You know, whether it's Vegas or when I was up at the end of my trip 2 years ago, I ended up in Lake Tahoe and in Reno, and then I did like Donner Pass and up there. Oh, it was like God's country, just absolutely gorgeous.
So how did you find that was your basically your escape? Because I know there's probably people out there. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
No.
The question I wanted to ask was, there's probably people out there kind of banging their heads right now. Maybe they just started out in an executive position or in a position like ours that haven't truly found their escape yet, and they're probably struggling. So I kind of wanted to discuss, you know, your ways, or how would you recommend for those people of, you know, how important it is to disconnect, right? And how could they find it?
Well, you find it from within. The president of Resorts World, NYC, Scott Molina, who's, I don't know how many years, Scott probably has 30-something years of casino experience, and probably half the people listening either have worked with Scott or know of him. And Scott and I sometimes banter about hiking. I'm like a hardware store when I do anything. I carry everything with me, and Scott travels very light. And I always say, Scott, what happens if you turn your ankle and you're stuck out at night? You know, so we laugh about it, but, you know, we both know being out there, for us, it's not for everybody. So, you know, some people, it's painting. You know, my wife loves to antique. You know, wherever you find some place or something to do, you got to go find it. I mean, we're all workaholics. I'm generally in around 8:30. I'm generally out of here around 7:30. It's an hour and a half home, so I leave my house before 7. I get home around 8:30. Sometimes I'm here on the weekends. We all do that. So what are we going to do to get away from that? Because if you don't recharge, you know, we have an expression in scuba called decompressing. When you're down certain depths at certain time periods, you know, your nitrogen bubbles build up and blah, 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 blah. You got to decompress. Otherwise, you come up and you're going to get yourself hurt. You're going to get, you know, so what is your decompression? If you're listening, what do you do to decompress? And maybe it's turning on the ball game. That's cool. But go to the ball game. And if the ball game is expensive, go to the minor league game. You know, I have a motto, opt out, get out of the four walls that you're breathing in and go discover outside somewhere. And you're going to feel great. And then on Monday morning when you come back into work, or whenever your Monday, maybe your Monday morning is a Saturday morning when you come back into work, I guarantee if you find something, you're going to get into it. We all, I follow Tino on social media. I see some of the crazy stuff he's doing. I'm like, oh, I wish I was there right now with him, because he looks like he's having a good time. And knowing him, I know he's having a good time. and that's going to help him with his job. That's going to help. You know, everybody take a soda bottle and shake it. And if you just turn it really fast, what happens? It explodes. But if you turn it very slow, what happens? Those carbon bubbles will settle back down. That's us. You know, we're the carbon bubbles inside of that bottle. You know, you got to unscrew the bottle very slowly. And that very slow is the, So you said you're in the Dakotas. I got to tell you, it never occurred to me to go to the Dakotas. But I've always been fascinated with Wild Bill Hickok and the mining towns and Deadwood.
Yep.
You know, so I flew into Denver and drove 6 hours through Nebraska. And when I hit your – I don't know, are you in North or South Dakota?
Right on the border. We're at exit one, right on the border, yep.
Okay. When I hit South Dakota, I was like, wow, this is really nice. And I just read an article today, one of the U.S. News and World Report. South Dakota is one of the best states to retire in. So, who knows? You may have a customer when I'm 70.
You'll have a funny accent around here.
You made your funny accent.
I'm just kidding. I do have one more question though, and it was kind of I was kind of curious about it. When I first got here, we obviously don't have the numbers you do, but I saw something different between Arizona and here as well, and that was, and you hit it right on the head, it was during the day, your retirees, and then as the night progresses, I saw that we got a younger crowd as well, and that's what you were mentioning, about how you
sure.
see that transition at night. How do you fight now when the younger crowd, the millennials, we all talk about that or whatnot. And again, you're in New York, so you're fighting against entertainment now with the young crowd, right? You're fighting the bars, you're fighting it. How do you reach out to them? How do you, you know, what is, you don't have to tell all your tricks in your book, but what's your go-to to try to entice them to come in with so many noise of entertainment in your city?
You know what? I'm gonna tell you the tricks in my book. You know how we market to the millennials? We go after their money. And you know who has their money? Their 50-year-old parents. I can't tell you how many seminars I sat in at G2E. I guess it was 3 years ago, and everything was about millennials.
Yeah.
And three years later, we're having the same discussion. Why is that? Well, it's the same discussion. I worked for one of my clients was a performing arts center. They had fabulous jazz program, and Queens is the home of jazz. Then look it up. Just Google who plays jazz born in Queens. You'll see the who's who of jazz. No 25-year-old is going to a jazz show. But somehow they find their way in their 40s and their 50s and their 60s to go listen to jazz. Well, what happened? The same thing happens to people who don't listen to classical music and don't want to hear Mozart or Beethoven or Chopin. Not in their 20s, but all of a sudden, you know, the Philharmonic opens and everybody's there. Where'd these people come from? They weren't born 50, 60 years old. They were millennials at one time. So people age in and age out of different experiences. I got rid of my Rangers season tickets after 10 years, and I said, you know what? I don't miss it. I'm going to go do something else now. The thought with if you're going to go after a millennial or if you're going to go after any demographic, you better stop thinking, what can we do to convince them to come to us, and just start thinking, what do they want?
Mm-hmm.
What do they want? And once you figure out what they want, you have to be honest, you know, are they Can we provide that? You know, not every person is a customer.
Sure.
And I think a lot of the C-suite folks who don't understand marketing, and you know, I'm very fortunate. I've had two bosses here as senior VPs with great marketing sense. Not everybody that's out there is a customer. I read a survey that said only about 30% of the population goes to casinos anyway. So we're already down to 3 out of 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have table games right now. So we know we lose business to Atlantic City, or we lose business to Connecticut because we don't have, you know, live blackjack. You got to play electronic.
Sure.
You know, the roulette wheel is real and the ball is spinning around is real, but it's just not the same because the croupier is not there. So, you know, not everybody that we want to have come here are going to come here because we don't have the product for them. Well, maybe it's the same thing for the millennial. And we are looking at that audience because we know pretty soon they're going to be 30 and they're going to have a job and they're going to have discretionary income and they're going to want to do something. And we have a couple of different ideas in the attic right now that we're thinking about. And maybe in 2 or 3 years when it launches and we're doing really well, I'll tell everybody else how we did it. I'm certainly not going to do it now. But, you know, not everybody is a customer. Figure out what it is you do and who wants your product. And if you want a millennial, maybe set up, I don't know, video gaming, you know, set up video gaming, but that's not what casinos do. I know the gaming manufacturers themselves have spent a lot of time making the game so much more dynamic and so much better, but I think the jury's still out on whether or not that millennial is going to see that game the way they see their computer screen. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Great, Rogelio. Thank you for the great questions. Really appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Great questions.
Yeah.
This is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Michael?
Hi. This is Jess Martinelli. I'm calling from Las Vegas, the D Las Vegas, to be specific. I'm also at the office, too. So far, it's... been a pleasure listening to you and getting some insight on the industry. I'm just a young professional and I'm wondering, how have you found the balance between not being afraid of taking risks while also making well-rounded decisions without sacrificing creativity and originality?
Yeah. The woman who hired me, she's have a saying, if you're not failing, you're not trying. We've all read books. One of the podcasts I listen to all the time is How I Built This. It's on NPR. And it's really, for me, inspirational because you hear about these ginormous companies and how they were started in somebody's garage or in the basement and how everybody thought they were nuts for doing it. And the first 3 years they had, you know, eating peanut butter and bologna sandwiches because they had no money. And all of a sudden something clicked and next thing, you know, da-da-da. You know, I think in most careers, most industries, in marketing, I think, you know, falls in this. You have the basics, you know, and you build those building blocks. To me, it was always the old PR model: race, research, assess, communicate, evaluate. You know, you kind of start there. You figure out what's been done, who's been successful. My boss Brad always reminds me: good artists borrow, great artists steal. You know, so if we see, you know, if we see somebody at a different property doing this fabulous promotion, you know, somebody was the first one to say, hey, let's give away a car. You know, we're giving away 2 Jeeps next month. Is that original? No. Does it work? Yes. So we're all giving away cars, you know. We're all giving away steak dinners. So, you know, you kind of twist it here and there and you tweak it. And then with the data, that's one of the really great things about technology in 2019. The data is immediate. You know, as I'm sitting here on my computer, I'm already seeing the reports coming in, you know, for how we're doing so far tonight. And this is one of the pieces that I love that I never had in my previous life. You didn't know how you were doing. Maybe the next day you'd call the admissions office and say, hey, how'd we do yesterday? Well, we had 6 busloads of students come in at 40 people a bus. But, you know, we're getting this data immediately. So we know if it's working. And we know if the reinvestment for a certain you know, segment is going to be working. And if it doesn't work, we change it, we tweak it. I think that's the piece. I think, you know, so it is a balance. You figure out what's working in the industry. You see if, hey, will that work for us? You know, for us, you know, we're kind of different than almost everybody, again, because of the hyper-localness. So we can take the same models that you folks out in Las Vegas take, because we don't have millions of people flocking to us every year specifically for that entertainment and gaming experience. So you take, you know, a little bit of the foundation, a little bit of innovation, you mix in some analysis off the research, and then you move along to the next one. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah. So I'm curious, you know, you guys are opening this this hotel or building the hotel. When is the opening date of that supposed to be, by the way?
Well, again, depending upon the timelines and who's you know, sharing the information, we're looking at somewhere between 12 and 14 months. So somewhere between May to, let's say, July of 2020.
Okay. Okay. So
yeah.
As far as the balance between players and, you know, I mean, you said it's going to be right across, you know, basically right across the street from JFK. You know, do you expect a lot of these, you know, transient or, you know, travel hotel guests only to fill the hotel more than a different local casino that has a hotel would versus filling it with players?
You know? Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would say, we probably, of course, because there's so many people coming into New York City through JFK Airport that and again, there are a lot of hotels in the area. We're going to be brand new at 4-star. You know,
sure.
People are going to want to stay here. And the sales team that that'll be brought in, you know, to do this selling, you know, they're going to know the market. They're going to know the flag, and they're going to know the tools of the trade and the tricks of the trade to maximize that. You know, I drive through JFK Airport every day and every night as part of my commute. I mean, that's how close we are. You know, uh-huh. It's a shortcut. I get off the Bell Parkway and I drive through the airport to get here. If we don't benefit from being that close to an airport, then boy, we're not doing a good job on that end of the marketing spectrum. That's for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jess. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too.
All right. This is Tino
Magnetta.
Do you have a question for Mike? Yeah, it was great. Michael Savino.
Yeah, hey, Michael. It's Rob Gallo, fellow Long Islander. How are you?
Hello, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. We met a couple of years ago at G2E. And I was just listening to your conversation, and earlier on you were mentioning a couple of things in particular about, you know, getting away and stepping out. A couple of years ago, I started practicing TM, Transcendental Meditation. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Of course, sure.
It's fantastic. Twice a day, 20 minutes a day, and it completely changed the way. I mean, I was a relaxed guy in the first place, but it just gives me a reason or a way to kind of escape, even though I'm in the middle of a deadline or a work thing.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But the other thing is, if this was a TV show instead of a radio blog, I think when you first started talking about the hotel, maybe 20, 30 minutes ago, I think you look like a kid who is just so excited. I heard it in your voice, and I think it's going to be a huge win for the property.
Yeah, I mean, you know, go online and type in Resorts World, and you'll see, you know, we're headquartered in Malaysia. You'll see these fantastic, over the top, gorgeous properties, and of course, all these resorts, all our resorts, have at least two commonalities. We all have a gaming floor, and we all have beds. We don't have that, you know. Yeah. So for us, we can only offer the day trip. We don't you know, there are some nights that, you know, if I'm here, like, working what they call the executive on duty staff, you know, I'll go to a local hotel to stay there so I'm not driving home at 1 in the morning. And it's a nice hotel, but it's you're in the hotel and there's nothing to do except go to the bar and have a bourbon, which is not the worst thing in the world. But now you're at a hotel that, you know, has the bar, has the restaurant, oh, has more restaurants, oh, has shopping, oh, has spa, and, oh, it's got 30,000 square feet of gaming space. Yeah, I think I want to stay there.
Yeah.
I think I want to stay there.
Exactly.
Or I'm coming from, you know, New York City's three largest feeder markets, Canada, Montreal, Toronto, England, mostly London, and China. So you're going to come to New York, and you're going to land at Kennedy Airport, and we're going to pick you up and drop you right off at our hotel. And then we're gonna take you on to a morning or an afternoon bus, and we're going to chauffeur you into the city, and you're going to have a hell of a time in Manhattan, and we're going to pick you up and bring you back, and you're going to have dinner here, and you're going to game here, and you're going to watch a show here, and you're gonna, tomorrow morning you're going to get up and have breakfast and maybe play a little bit and go back into the city, and you're going to do that instead of going into Manhattan and paying a small fortune for a hotel and having to deal with all that nonsense. So yeah, I'm excited like a kid in a candy store because
now I'm excited.
we already have the gaming, and now we're gonna have the piece that I know our player development department, Joe DeVito, does a great job. He's gonna have a place now. Chris Seuss does a great job. He now has a place now where he can give his best players, hey, here's one for, on us. Thank you very much for being a great customer all these years. So yeah, I mean. If you're doing casino marketing and you're saying, gee, I wonder how we would do without a hotel, you know? Email Tino and give him effect. Let's do that. Email Tino, how would not having a hotel affect my marketing strategy? I mean,
it's a big game changer. Like you said, you don't have to. It's not day trippers anymore. Now you come to us and you stay with us, and we get your full share of wallet for the entire trip.
Yeah, it's
not just
so,
you know,
the
a portion.
Yeah, the last caller asked me how.
And that's beautiful.
That's exactly right. The last caller asked about millennials. Well, instead of millennials, I get to now think about travel tourists and weekenders. You know,
and
I get to add,
who are the biggest gamblers.
I get to add that to my target audience. So I'm.
I mean, you know, any Asian that has a layover or whatever, they're coming to your casino, no questions asked.
Well, we do well with the Chinese and the Korean market here. Again, all local.
Yeah.
Can only help. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Last question before I let you go with somebody else was you mentioned something about a peanut butter and bologna sandwich. Legit on that or what?
No, but I will tell you, I'm an old TV guy. The Odd Couple, Oscar Madison had a salami and jelly sandwich, and I tried that once.
Oh, The Odd Couple. What a show.
Yeah, I used to have salami and cream cheese my mother used to make me years ago.
Salami and cream cheese.
Yeah, that's a good sandwich, believe it or not. Anyway,
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for chatting with you.
If you guys you were to tell those sandwiches to any Italian, they would think you were nuts. In Italy?
Well, we're both Italians, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
All right,
I'm talking in Italy.
Care,
I really like an Italian from Italy. Take care, man. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Salami and peanut butter. They'd be like, what the hell? This is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Michael Savino?
Hey, good evening, Michael. Tino, it's been a pleasure listening to you all and your energy this evening. Thank you. I got a question, Michael, considering tribal gaming, native land, and New Mexico. Do you see any big red flags or any concerns regarding location? It sounds like you have a great location for longevity and sustainability for the gaming market. But out here, it seems like we're always continuously relying on the baby boomers, and we see them slowly fading away. And yes, the millennials and other generations are really changing the food and beverage industry, but not really the gaming part of it. Do you see any concerns with that?
Yeah. I mean, we always have to keep an eye out as a demographic shift, the ethnographics, and really the behavioral aspects where people are getting their enjoyment. I'm confident, though. Like I said earlier, I use the jazz or the classical music analogy. People are going to age into gaming. We, as an industry, we have to be smarter about the games we offer. And, you know, this is one of the best parts of going to something like a G2E. You get to see the big gaming manufacturers and how they're, you know, you see a lot more games now that are branded to performers and musicians and TV shows and movies, you know, trying to make more of an emotional connection. I was out there at the last show and I saw one of the gamers, one of the manufacturers, they've got a game now of MacGyver. MacGyver's like one of my favorite shows of all time. I'm not really crazy about slots. I can't wait to find that game somewhere and play it because I just love MacGyver. I think that's going to continue to happen. I think we're going to continue to evolve. We're going to continue to be smart about how we communicate and how we reach out. And the technology is going to get us to the next level the way we've been seeing it, whether it's an email campaign or whether it's just digital media buys or text campaigns, push notifications. Yeah, we're going to get there. I mean, you know, we always have to be rolling up our sleeve and working hard every day. You don't get me wrong. No one's going to have an easy ride, and we don't have an easy ride because the number that we have to hit every week, that's a big number. So, you know, we're all out there, but I think we're okay. I don't have particular knowledge of the New Mexico tribal gaming space, but I'm sure you guys are killing it out there, and you know, the competition's going to be there, the demographics, all that. No matter where we are, no matter who we're marketing for, it's the same thing. I mean, the Major League Sports are concerned because these fantasy sports leagues have turned younger folks from being fans of a team to fans of a player. You know, I couldn't imagine as a Jets fan drafting, you know, Tom Brady and rooting for him every Sunday to score, you know, to throw four or five touchdown passes. I want the Patriots to lose. I'm a Jets fan. But I'm playing fantasy sports. All of a sudden, I want Tom Brady to have a great weekend, even against my team. So, you know, the sports industry is facing the same thing. You know, we're all facing the same thing. How many bookstores have been put out of business because of the big online? You know, so the ones that are left, they have to figure out how to be unique, how to separate themselves. And I used to tell a client, you don't have to be bigger. Just be different. Find that niche that separates you from the other guy, and that's your wheelhouse. So good luck. It's going to be a fun ride for all of us.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth? Now, with sports betting sort of just now coming online out here, what do you think the next big critical mass shift is going to be in the next two or three generations within the gaming world?
Well, New York is still debating sports betting, so we're still looking at that. And we're also statewide. There's a lot. It's been in the papers and such, so I'm not divulging anything dramatic here. There's been a discussions about whether or not the table game licenses could be extended to properties such as ours. So here, we're still looking at that. You know, the sports betting, I think for whatever the percentage is of on-property sports betting, we all know that the app is just going to, just bigger. You know, some states have been way ahead of the curve on it. What's the next thing? Boy, if I knew, you think I would be telling you right now over the air? I don't have a clue. Yeah, I don't know. I think the gaming floor itself is going to evolve. I think it's, and we're already starting to see it. You know, we're going to see more dynamic, you know, more immersive experiences. I saw a slot machine that actually has sensors to follow your path of your eyes. Yeah, I think that's all coming into play. All the touch screens and all the virtual reality stuff. I think all of that's on the table. I think all and augmented reality is on the table. I think it's all out there, and time will tell if it's gonna last. And if it does, it's only because there was a market for it. Because somebody said, right. Yeah, I'll spend money for that. I love that experience. I'll do that. And if not enough people say that, then it'll be something else that shows up.
Yeah, a lot more skill set,
Brian,
interactive
so much.
Gaming. Thank you so much. Enjoy
thanks
the energy.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, we got time for one more. Hello, this is Tino Magnata. Do you have a question for Michael?
Evening, Tino and Michael. How are you guys doing? This is Nick Lawson.
Good.
Good, very good.
Good. First off, I'd say you have to bring Michael back when they're getting ready to open the convention center in phase 2 of the hotel. You might need some tranquilizers, the amount of excitement.
we'll get him on a hike before he goes.
I love it. I'm not going to talk about the hotel because I don't want to. That's been fantastic to listen about. One thing I spent quite a bit of time on your floor. If you could talk just a little bit, you gamble a little bit of money and you get a printout for cupcakes and hot dogs and different types of things. I wonder if you could talk about like the strategy you have in that, because I don't really see that anywhere else.
I don't know if I don't see it anywhere else. I think we're all doing the same thing, which is how much can we give our customer as a reward for their play that will entice them to play some more, where they feel like, hey, I came a couple of hours, had a drink of choice, had some fun, got a voucher for a soda and a hot dog or a birthday cupcake, saw some nice-looking people. They smiled at me. I smiled back. And then I went home. I had a nice time. I got to do this again. And on our end, all we say is, okay, they – purely hypothetical numbers here. This is not anybody's formula. The person spent $200 playing slots. Okay, $200. We gave them the cupcake. We valued the cupcake at $5. Our cost is $1.50. We gave them a discounted drink. It was $4 there. So they gave us $200. Now, the New York State tax rate is we pay 78% of gross on money that, you know, on gaming revenue. So we factor out what 22% return on $200 is, how much money we invested in them on free play and the hot dog and the soda and the muffin. And then we say, okay, was that a good investment? And then we see them come back the next week and they do it again. And then we see them come back the next week and they do it again. And then we say, hey, you know what? This is working. This is working. Let's keep doing this. I'm sure everybody's doing this. You know, it's a matter of how much do you give the customer to make them feel valuable. And they really, and of course, they are valuable beyond the gaming value. They're valuable. You want energy on your floor. You want people in the building. You want word of mouth to be spread. So they're valuable in so many ways. Yet you don't want to overinvest in them where they're just using your money, house money, and then they're leaving. You know, so it's one of these scales that we're all doing. How much of this? How much salt? How much pepper? Can we take a little salt away from their diet and give them a little more pepper? You know, we're all doing that. And the ones who are doing it well are the ones that we see week to week and month to month, you know, having that strength. And the ones that aren't doing it well will hopefully figure out how to do it better. And then they'll start doing it well. So, yeah, it's constant, though, Tino, right? It's every single day.
Every day. You got to keep moving like a shark or you die. So, yeah.
I totally agree with you that the strategy behind what you just described. I haven't seen the level of – I've never seen a marketing department set up a food outlet, essentially, to reward their customers in a grind. It's unique.
Yeah.
It's something I've
Are you local?
No, I'm. Well, we partner with you, Process Service Culture. First off, so I'll see you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but
Nice plug. Way to get a good plug in at the end of the show.
Absolutely.
Well,
you
asked.
Nick's a great guy.
You know, so we see hundreds of casinos like Tino and Nigali do, and that particular tactic that you use to reinvest in your customer. It's something I haven't seen before.
Well, you know what? I don't know if Resorts World Las Vegas would be successful doing that because it's a different customer that's going to be on their property.
Absolutely.
Our customer lives three blocks over, you know, so they're coming here to play and get lunch. You know,
Well, your competitors in New York don't do that.
Well, I'm sure whatever they're doing makes sense for them, and what we're doing seems to make sense for us. So, as my Yiddish friends would say, "Gei gesundheit, go in good health." God, you know.
Right. Exactly.
I love the diplomatic answer. That's awesome.
Nick, thanks
you know,
so much,
years
man.
Ago,
I really appreciate. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Mike.
God, no, I was gonna say. Years ago, when I worked at the Hall of Science, my counterpart, Liz Romano, over at Liberty Science Center, and we were only like 40 minutes away from each other, somebody asked her about us being competitors with each other, and her answer was great. I wish I had come up with it. She said, there's enough science ignorance in New York to go around. You know, and that was her way of saying, yes, I guess we're competitors, but we really aren't. You know, the other casinos, the folks north of us, they've got a geographic marketplace. They're doing very well up there. We have a geographic marketplace. We're doing very well up down here. So I consider it friendly competition. Now, I have a fence around my yard. If you want one of my vegetable plants, you knock on my door and you ask. If you come and try to take it, I'm going to hit you over the head. And that's how I look at our friendly competition. I'm not giving an inch. We have our market. We're going to expand. We've got competition looking at us. We're very well positioned to grow, and we're going to grow with the help of a lot of smart people, both internally and externally, with a lot of great vendors such as GT Advertising. We're going to continue to grow. We had a great conversation, you and I, the other night. And it was an hour long while I was driving, right? But I had so many ideas came out of our discussion. As soon as I got home, I jotted them all down. Next day I came in, I had a meeting with my key staff, and you know, we tweaked it, put some changes in place and got information back over to you guys to work on. You know, it's that constant work doesn't stop. We don't stop. And so yeah, it's great. It's a great ride.
Great, Nick. Thanks so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
Oh. Yeah.
Have a good evening.
My one of my media companies just texted me. Great vendors like GT Advertising and Outfront. What a gratuitous plug. I mean, these people, you give these people money, and they I'm not even gonna mention her name for doing that. So
Mike,
oh, boy.
It's always great having you on the show. I have so many laughs. I'm looking forward to seeing you. You're coming to casino marketing, right?
Because there's nothing better than to be out in. There's nothing better than being out in the desert in the middle of the summer. I mean, that's really great. I mean.
Oh, that's the best. It's the best. Best weather.
And then I hear from the locals, the dry heat. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, right. It's been really good having you on the show as usual. We're going to have you back, of course, and you have a great night, and let's organize that hike, like we said.
Yeah, it's always great talking to you. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, you got
about
it, buddy.
All right, man. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. I see you. Bye-bye. All right, that was great. Michael's just a great guy. And knows a lot of things. Funny too. So Monday I have the original first guest on the show, Conrad Granito, one of my best friends. I love the guy. And when you hear the show, you'll see why. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. You have a good night, and we'll see you on Monday.